Hello and welcome everyone. I'm Pete Denby, co-founder of Hyperfinity, the decision intelligence platform for retail. This is To Affinity and Beyond, our podcast about all things retail and consumer with a keen focus on decision intelligence, data science and AI. This time I'm delighted to be joined by Ashika Hyde. Ashika is a technology evangelist with a passion for how data and analytics can unlock business value. She's worked for retailers and brands including Jaguar Land Rover and Boots, and more recently Dunelm as their head of trading analytics. In this episode, we'll be covering location planning or space analytics. Kirsty and Phil taught us location is key when it comes to buying residential property, and the same applies to retail. According to Retail Gazette, a retailer's location is a determining factor of its success. But it's not an easy decision. There's lots to consider when opening a store, from nearby competition and seasonality to customer demographics and area affluence. In a world where footfall is declining and retailers are fighting to stay front of mind, it's crucial to power location decisions using data and analytics. So Ashika, welcome. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Happy to be here, Pete.
Brilliant. Could you just start by giving us an overview of your career to date, including your current role and focused areas at Dunelm, please?
Yeah, of course. So as you said, I work as head of trading analytics at Dunelm. That role involves looking after commercial analytics. So that's working with the in-store and online trading teams to help do the right thing for our customers while maximizing business value. I also look after the store's operations analytics, which is probably most relevant to what we're talking about today. So it's all things space, whether that's, you know, the location, which I've referred to as megaspace, and then what actually happens within the four walls of a store, which is like the macro space, and then the actual products that sit in that space, so the micro space. And I also have a small data science team, which services all of the areas of analytics within the organization. So this role is really exciting because, you know, we started to build and grow the analytics organization about 18 months ago in Dunelm, and the team's grown massively, and we've got a lot of stakeholder buy-in and a lot of support from the exec to really work with the business teams and accelerate growth in the organization. And it's been an exciting opportunity to be able to do that for myself and for my colleagues, and to build out a truly exceptional analytics team within Dunelm. More personally, career-wise, as you've said, I've worked in retail for a long time. So 12 years out of my 16 years, I've been in retail, and I started in space analytics. So it's still very close to my heart. Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to talking about it a lot more with you.
Okay, fantastic. And am I right in saying you started off at Capital One, so probably around risk analytics?
Yes, so I started in... Well, I started in Capital One, and the person I was supposed to work for was leaving. So I got put under a director for about 4 months, who'd just come from the US.
Okay.
And he asked me to just compare the US and UK business for him. So I started everywhere, yeah. Which was very interesting. I learned a lot. And I think over the 2.5 years there, because it's already a digitally transformed organization, very data-led, it was a really great place to start to build my understanding of analytics. I think what I started to realize was I liked the customer facing product development side a lot more than going into risk.
Yeah.
And so the switch to retail, and the reason I've been in retail for so long.
Yeah. It's uncanny the amount of people who seem to have started with some exposure to risk analytics. The people who I established my business with, Hyperfinity, all four of us actually have had exposure to risk analytics at the start of our career. I think it was one of the kind of early pioneers in using data and analytics to apply to business decision making. So it served quite a few of us very well, I think. It's amazing the amount of people I come across.
Yeah, I agree. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And then you had a spell at Boots as well, I believe, which must have been very interesting and quite exciting, having access to lots and lots of data through the Advantage card.
Yeah, no, it was. And I think I thought I'd be going into work with the Advantage card on the loyalty side, but then, and that's the role I'd applied for, but when the offer came through, it was for space analytics, and I didn't know anything about it, but the job title sounded really cool. So I went in for the interview to just learn more about it. And, it was from a maths background, operations research, it sounded like the most difficult optimization problem. And it just really intrigued me, and I've just never stopped being excited about it. So we were part of a very small team, five of us, doing it for the UK. And then Walgreens got involved with Boots, and we got to take this discipline across Mexico, Chile, Norway, Thailand, South Korea to the US finally. So it's an exciting period of learning to apply this across lots of different then very different countries, and to really kind of hone the skill and understand, that play between the art and the science of it. But yeah, that was a really interesting 8 years.
Good stuff. Good stuff. All right, great. So let's move on to location planning and some questions around that topic. So in your experience, how do retailers typically make location planning decisions?
That's a big question, and I think there is a lot of variation between retailers. But if I really simplify, just go take it down to the absolute basics, I think there'd be three questions that all retailers are probably or hopefully asking themselves. So I think the first is, where we're going, is there our target customer? And is there enough of our target customer to sustain a store? You do need to know who your target customer is up front. To be able to answer that question, I think the second one is this a convenient location for our target customer to shop at? So that could be, if your target customer is somebody who had cars, it would be around drive times and ease to get there, parking spaces. If it's a store or a retailer that people usually walk to, you might want to look at transport links or how close it is to residential areas. So it can be lots of different things for different people, and it totally depends on who your target customer is. But is it convenient for them? And third, I'd say, is does it meet your operational requirements? I've seen retail centers where they bring in an anchor store, for example, who might have a food court, and part of the agreement might be that any other business can't do that. So if a food offer was part of your ethos and what you offer to your customers, then that's not the right location for you. Similarly with opening hours, costs, the size of the store that you might like, so there can be lots of operational requirements that it needs to meet. What I'd say is there's no right or wrong answer to it. What is important is that you've thought through your business strategy, and you've thought about what role stores play for your organization, and so what is the right store for you, and those answers then to those questions need to align with your stores. I know I'm kind of feel like I'm slightly oversimplifying, but I think that's at the ethos of it, the core of it. Just to illustrate like how complicated it can get, how quickly. I remember like when I applied for the first role at Boots, my director, the question he asked me was, he said, if you're on a beach and you have a beach hut already at one end of the beach and you set up another hut, and the idea is that people will come to whichever's closer to them, where would you set up the hut? And he didn't tell me, what I was trying to maximize. So I was like, well, if I put it two-thirds of the way away, it's kind of better for most customers. But if I put it directly next to the hut, it might not be convenient for customers, but that's how I maximize my profit. So that's just two factors coming to play with this silly big hut, right? So it gets really complicated really quickly. And that is why understanding your business strategy and what role stores play in that is the first step.
Well, I think that's a fantastic way to look at it, actually, because I think clearly it's a very complex decision to make when you really get into the nuts and bolts of it. But the way you've described it is a really logical way to describe it from a business point of view and also from a customer's point of view as well, which is really important. I think putting yourself in the shoes of the customer and why they might select a store to visit is a vital part of it. And surprisingly, can be missed by some organizations. I think it's a great way to look at it. And how can data and analytics be used to impact decisions around where to locate a store?
So I'd say, you know, I'm a real believer in experts, and the people I've worked in with location planning have been really good at what they do. So when it comes to really obviously good and obviously bad decisions, they'll mm-hmm. do it, and they'll know, and they'll do it really well. I think it's in the margins where we come into play, where the decisions are more marginal and the outcomes are not as obvious. And yes, you can find those positive opportunities, and that's exciting. But I think where analytics really pays for itself is to avoid those not so obvious, really poor decisions that could be catastrophic. Now, location decisions probably are really high on that list because, you know, we're talking about, 15-year leases, maybe if you're lucky, a break clause at 10 years. Then the investment in finding the colleagues there, fitting out the store, you've had an offer, you have some customers now. It's a really, really hard decision to unwind. So getting it right first time is really important. And I think that's where data and analytics really comes into its own.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, again, a good way of looking at it, I think, you speak to some people outside of retail, they ask why automation is not applied in, you know, lots and lots and lots of different areas of retail. And I think to a point about, you know, the kind of some decisions or the more obvious decisions, but, you know, people can make those, you know, part of the strength of a lot of retail organizations are the people that work there and have, you know, worked there for some time, and they understand the market and they understand various things. But yeah, I think it's around the margins where data and analytics can make a big difference. And we always say it's about empowering people to make a better decision. So not necessarily replacing a human being in the process, but how can you give them the insight that they need? You know, always a good question is if you know, what are the three pieces of information that you'd love to make a great decision around? You know, it could be the store to the location for your next store, or, you know, it could be another commercial decision. But I think, yeah, how can you arm people to make a great decision, particularly around the margins when they're not quite sure what the right answer is?
Absolutely. And it's, I always kind of say data analytics is just another tool, another way. And it's adding to your tools that you use for decision making already. Yeah. It's not replacing things, but it's a very good addition. And actually, I think it's one of the tools which allows you to delegate decision making with some confidence. And that's what kind of accelerates decision making in an organization. And that's really crucial to be able to accelerate decision making in organizations. So that's why it's an important tool, but it's not the only one.
Okay. And what kind of data might feed into making a decision around location planning?
So it's one of these, I used to joke about how, you know, maybe you say everything but the kitchen sink when it comes to modeling, you might as well check in the kitchen sink as well. So back to those three questions, you do need to know about your customer, so demographic data, you need to know about your location, so geospatial data, and you might want to know a little bit about your competitors and some of your operational constraints. But really, I think my advice generally is don't start with the data because it's so easy to get overwhelmed. So again, going back to the experts in the organization, it's usually quite a good idea generally across analytics to talk to the people who are making these decisions and ask them how they make the decisions and start collecting all these hypotheses of what people think is really important, because then you have a set of hypotheses and you can talk to other analysts as well, so experts in business and in analytics, and get together a really good list of hypotheses. And then you can test these. So you then find the data that allows you to test, so prove or disprove these hypotheses in time. And if there are gaps, because there can be in the data for lots of reasons, you know, some data is really costly, some's just not available, some is available but not reliable. So if there are gaps, you know, if you're making assumptions or you're making something like that, just make it really visible. So again, like over exaggerated example, but I think if you're opening a greengrocer's and you kind of know that your tomato sales, if you can figure out how many tomatoes sell, you can kind of figure out how much, you know, your whole grocer is selling. But that's because you know that onions sell about half as much as tomatoes, potatoes sell about a third as much. So you might have all these assumptions. Now, if you don't make that visible to people who are applying it. Somebody might go somewhere else, look at the tomato sales, predict something, and expect the sales to be a certain amount. Now, what if it's an area where people don't eat root vegetables or anything that grows under the ground? That's maybe a bit of an Indian culture thing, but there are people who don't eat onions, garlic, things like that. So in that area, you get it wrong. Now, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't have created that model. That model did help you in most places. It just means that you should have made those assumptions really clear, visible, and you know, kept them front of mind for people. So it, just because you don't have all the data doesn't mean you can't still build something really good. You just then need to be really careful in how it's used.
Okay, yeah, good. And how does the location planning and store locations, how do they then impact some of the other commercial decisions that a retailer might make? So, for example, the product range that's offered in a store, or even, you know, the pricing used for companies. You know, I know not all companies use differential pricing, but yeah, how does that work? How does location planning, some of the other kind of commercial decisions, how do they into play?
Yeah, so I know of organizations that use differential pricing. I haven't really worked in too many that do that. So I'm going to assume that we've got the location right, more or less, because if we haven't, then we have a big problem and we might not be able to solve that with what happens inside the store. But assuming that we've got the location right, for me, that's kind of where the magic really starts. That's where I start getting really excited, because what you have is this really difficult optimization problem in a way, because what you're trying to do is you're trying to personalize the store as much as possible to the customers that will shop that store. Now, you have a really good, deep understanding of who the customers are because you've done that work when you did your location analytics. But at the same time, you need to balance that with, you know, people being able to recognize your store as what it is and as the retailer you are. You can't do something too drastically different. You can make some bold choices, but there has to be a balance. You also need to make it such that people can go to different stores in different locations and still be able to shop your store. So there has to be some kind of symmetry there. And you know, you still need to meet your business value. So you have to balance the customer needs with your business needs. But it does impact everything. And I think it's not very dissimilar from when people talk about mass personalization online. You are trying to personalize your stores. You just have a bigger base of people you're trying to personalize to. I think my only watch out on that is because people talk a lot about affluence and ethnicity and things like that, which have an impact. But I'd say, yes, they do. Absolutely, they do, but we just need to be slightly careful in how we apply it, right? So like an example that I can think about is when I was working in the US, there's a lot of talk about ethnic hair, and everybody was talking about how, you know, in certain stores, taking it out from hair care and making it look more different. But when we start to look at the data, we are seeing that people who are buying ethnic hair are also buying a lot of anti-dandruff shampoos. And actually, if you just looked at which shampoo they were buying the most, it was anti-dandruff shampoo. So I don't know whether that was because as a retailer, we still hadn't made that space in their minds as the first choice for ethnic hair. But if I just use my example, I have dark hair and dry skin. Anti-dandruff shampoos are absolute must for me. I rotate through the other brands of shampoo, but I'll definitely use an anti-dandruff. So when you're thinking about ethnic hair care build, should that have anti-dandruff shampoo in it to complete the offer? So when you start to personalize based on demographics, you just need to be very careful in how you do it. Otherwise, you might lose customers. So let the data lead you.
Absolutely. And that's just made me think of another question, actually, in terms of how you analyze that kind of information. And I guess if it's a potential new store opening where you don't have any data about store sales because there's no store there yet, would you tend to use analyze data from other stores, or do you, with the growth of omnichannel retail, do you tend to look at digital analytics as well? So how people shop the online store to then provide insights which will then feed into location planning?
So yeah, so it's a mix of trying to look for a proxy store. So you'd match on things like demographic and geospatial information rather than on sales or size of store or things like that, because your analytics can let you move the size of the store, understanding online shopping behaviors and matching areas or regions or catchments on online behavior to try and see. That's another way of finding good proxy things. In an ideal world, if it wasn't a very expensive decision, you would have like a base average of all the stores that were similar, and that's where you'd start. And then you'd kind of change the space as you learn more about the store. But yeah, because basing it on one proxy store is quite hard. So you might find three or four average what's happening in those stores, because it does get you closer. But if you don't always have the means to do that, then you try and kind of match to the closest proxy store.
Yeah, that makes sense. Makes sense. And have you seen big shifts in the way that customers shop, kind of on shop in an omni channel way? So you can see it as a seamless journey now. So they might look online at a retailer, and then they might go in store, and maybe they're expecting that to be very seamless in terms of the look and feel of it. Have you seen that kind of customer journey change a lot through the years?
I think COVID's moved us forward like 10 years on that, hasn't it? Just forced everybody online, and apps became a must, and people have switched back to stores, of course, but there are also people who maybe would have never gone online who are now still using online where it's really convenient. I think it matters what kind of shopping you're doing. So if it's like a considered purchase, I can think of something like furniture, right? You might look at it online, then you might go into a few stores to look at the different furniture, sit on it, because that matters. Yeah. Touch feel, then you might come back, you might do a little bit more research online, you might kind of narrow down your choices to a few retailers, you might go back out again. This time you might have conversations, see who's offering what kind of finance offers. So that can take like 90 days even. So that's definitely an omnichannel journey. In some other areas, it might be a case of actually a preference. Some people prefer stores, and you'd probably do a lot more impulse shopping if you were in a store, and you might buy more broadly. Online can be a bit more targeted. But yes, I don't think there are many people now who kind of see those as completely different shopping missions. And from everything we've seen and customer research come out of lots of organizations, they do say that people do expect you to know who they are and expect you to know irrespective of what channel they're using. There's very little tolerance for kind of getting that wrong. So all retailers do need to start looking at it as one customer and one journey, irrespective of where the touch points might be.
Yeah, absolutely. And from your own perspective, what do you see as a great customer experience when you go to visit a physical store?
So me personally, I quite like having, I guess, a clean shopping environment where I can kind of identify what I'm looking for. And this sounds a bit silly, but I am one of those people who doesn't use markers and signs to navigate. So like if I'm in a grocer, I'm kind of like, oh, there are the fridges, there's the milk bottles, the cheese must be somewhere nearby. I'm not actually looking at signs. So, it needs to be like, there has to be that some familiarity and best practice, which is common to that area of retailers. But I do like, a clean, by clean, I mean like, I like offers. I'm a real offers person. In fact, I think I got into maths because when I was little, my mom used to take me to the shops and I'd stand in front of like, say, all the toothpaste, and they had different offers and different toothpaste. And she was like, which one should I get? Which is the best one? So, but that's not good as a customer, right? You don't understand and look at 20 offers trying to figure out which one's right. So I do like places where there's some offers, but it's not like everything's red and a sea of red. So that's for me where, I like my choice curated for me a little bit. But I do like the occasional surprise. In terms of customer service, people being there so I can ask the question, but not hovering over me, but that's me. I think a lot of people do like a lot more interaction But customer service is such an important part of going into a store for me. Otherwise, I might as well have done it online.
You can never underestimate the importance of customer service assistance in a store. I think it's really vital. It's one of the things that elevates the physical shopping experience over buying stuff online. And I agree, certain products you've got to touch and feel them. And if it's furniture, for example, you need to use the furniture. You need to sit on the furniture, lie in it, to get a feel. I think the same with clothes as well. The convenience of being able to return clothes nowadays is great. But at the end of the day, you do still need to try them on to see if they fit. So I think physical shopping is still really, really important. I think the vast majority of retail is still, in a physical environment as well.
Absolutely. It's still the biggest channel for most retailers. I do encourage all my analysts to go out in stores and actually go out to competitors or non-competitors even, because I think we've become very tolerant of our own stores. So if you go out there and you grumble about something with someone else, which is easier to do, and then it allows you to kind of reflect on whether you do that as well. I remember going to the grocery store. It's past my house, and there's one which is before, but I went to that one because I was like, I used to go to that one. I'm more familiar with that one. I'll just go there. And they went in and they came out, and my husband was like, oh, that took longer than usual. And I was like, yeah, they've moved everything. I mean, it looks much nicer, but they've moved everything. I'm so annoyed. And he was like, isn't that literally your job? So we have to be really aware that when we do things and make changes, we are doing it for the right reasons, which in the long term will help the customers. Otherwise, you will lose your customers.
Yeah, definitely. There's a big thing about familiarity as well. In grocery retail, everybody's very familiar with grocery retail. We all go shopping at the supermarket, either online or in person. I think that's the epitome of familiarity. And to your point about having the milk and other products kind of nearby each other, I think if you go to a supermarket and things have been moved around, it really aggravates people because they want a nice efficient shopping experience, the occasional moment of delight, and feel as though they're getting really good value for money. They have to spend a lot of money on getting that stuff right, a lot of time on getting that stuff right. Okay, great. I just want to finish off with a couple of more general questions around data to get your view on. And the first one really is, how do you think organizations can become more data driven in their decision making, or data informed decision, beyond the realm of location planning?
For me, it has to be driven from the top. I think that's the first thing. So you absolutely need executive buy-in, and for them to not just kind of go like, yes, we want our teams to do this, for them to actually want to be involved themselves. Like I said previously, the advantage you get from data-driven decision-making is acceleration of decision-making, which comes from delegation, which, won't happen if the people at the top aren't convinced of it and aren't participating in it. So you'd lose most of the advantage if you don't have that exec buy-in. So I think that's the first thing, and that's kind of a difficult one to crack sometimes, but I think that's the very important one. I think the second thing is training. I've always kind of said tooling without training, and sounds kind of crazy, but you might as well chuck the money away. Like, what's the point? But a lot of organizations do that, bring in new tooling, and then there's no training, so nobody uses it in the way it should be. I think that's a really important part of it. And then there's making the time, because this is a new skill people are learning. It's not a side of desk job. It's not an easy thing to do. And expecting people to find their own time is not fair, because once they've learned the skill, they will add so much value to the business. So making the time for development with the team. So I think that is what you'd need to really transform as an organization. Because everybody needs to get involved. And then finally, I think there needs to be some storytelling around why this is important change, right? This is a culture change. This isn't just a tech program or a people program. It's a culture change. And so why should people buy into it and why it matters to them? And, you know, that kind of hearts and minds thing is really important as well. But we're talking about digital transformation. Initial stages, if you're not really involved with analytics, actually setting up a small analytics team can make a big step change. Mm-hmm. And then maybe setting up small functional analytics team and creating that hub and spoke model. I do believe in hub and spoke rather than a big centralized team, because I think there's a lot of expertise and functions which you don't get the advantage of if you're not part of the function. So I think those are the initial steps of, you know, a small central team, then turning into hub and spoke, and then you can aim for the full digital transformation. Huge gap between going from hub and spoke to digital transformation. That's like enormous. Most programs talk about it as like the next step. I think it's like if you go step one, two, and then you go to step 100. And I think you should plan to do that journey and not just set out on it thinking that it'll happen, because it won't.
Okay, good stuff. And then the final question, along similar lines, really. We hear a lot about kind of data democratization, so putting data in the hands of decision makers. And where do you sit on the spectrum of, you know, the tools and the data that you put in the hands of decision makers? So do you think it's feasible to have decision makers using, you know, analytics products, albeit not necessarily, you know, learning to code to use those products? Or do you think it's more a case of them receiving information from an analytics team that just gives them the bits of information they need to make a great decision? Yeah, to what extent do you think those end decision makers should be interacting with analytics themselves?
So I'll use my MBA learning and say it depends. that's like our favorite answer. But no, I think it's a mix of both. So you will have people who part of their job, 30% of their job is looking at data in every function. And with those guys, with the right training, you can create what you might call citizen analysts. And those are guys who you would expect to be able to drill down into data and look at it. But like if you're talking about, like, you know, somebody who is in an active operational role and that isn't part of their job as such, but they could use data to actually, you know, make their life easier or make it a better value for the business, then they would use it. But you have to then make it such that they can just consume it and really well. And so it has to be about the so what. So I kind of separate reporting from analytics dashboards. So if we talk about like a store's example, you know, if you just told the store what their sales were in every department, that's a report. But if you told them that actually in your cohort of similar stores, this is your rank and these are the areas other people are doing better at, and the areas they're doing better at, these are the products that they're being able to sell more of, they could do something with that. And I think that's the difference. But if you got them to that point, they should then be able to use that data to actually help with what they're doing. But I wouldn't expect them to be able to drill down to get to that point. That's not a fair expectation of somebody in that role.
Yeah, that's a great point. So moving from data to insight, so rather than just a static piece of information, it's the context around it, isn't it? So this is how you're performing relative to, you know, something else, to give them, to make it directional, really. So these are the things you might want to focus on to improve things. I also completely agree around, you know, it's kind of role and circumstance, situation dependent, that then dictates the extent to which they get involved with analytics, or, you know, just giving them kind of key pieces of information. So definitely concur on that. Okay, brilliant. Well, that has been really, really insightful. Fantastic, Ashika. Thank you ever so much for joining and sharing your experience and thoughts on location analytics. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's like one of my favorite topics to talk about, so it was really fun.
Brilliant. Super. Okay, so thank you to our guest, Ashika Hyde. Thank you to everyone for listening. If you have any feedback on the podcast, please get in touch, peterdenby@hyperfinity.ai, and you can find the podcast on all the major podcast platforms. So please subscribe, and we look forward to seeing you again.